Welcome to Running Off the Rails. My name is Raymond O'Connor.
And I'm Ariel Rasko.
And today we're joined by a special guest, one of my players, JJ. Thanks for coming, JJ.
Hello. Thanks for having me. You guys have a really nice place here. Is that a fondue fountain?
It's actually two fondue fountains.
Yeah, one's for Ray and the other is actually Ray's. Also, he doesn't like to share.
I don't. And I consume a lot of fondue. But JJ, what did you want to talk to us about today on Running Off the Rails?
I wanted to talk today about decision-making in Dungeons & Dragons, which seems like a topic that you don't really even have to cover. But when you kind of think about it, there are different ways, of course, to play Dungeons & Dragons. And I think I've narrowed it down to two decision-making processes. You can either make your decisions based on role-playing as your character or being a player sitting at the table, or I guess a hybrid of the two of those. I thought that would be a fun little nugget to take apart today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's definitely happened to me at the table, and I've seen it happen to Mark at our table, JJ. Sometimes the thing that your character would want, if you were role-playing your character in earnest, doesn't always line up with what you as a player are most excited to do. So the example that jumps to my mind immediately, just because it was so recent, was when Mark was faced with Isotar's decision to either stay inside the ring and study with Vecna, which would mean basically giving up his character for 5 in-game years, and he would have to basically make a new character because his character would not be around for 5 years, which is what his character would have wanted if he was role-playing, and what Mark wanted, which was to continue playing this character who he loved dearly and wanted to take all the way from level 1 to 20. And that was a really hard decision for Mark.
I think that's a really instructive example, because what you're pointing to is what I think is the real virtue of D&D. And we talk a lot about being in character as a virtue, something that can add a lot of value to the game. But I think that is a means to an end. And an end is having fun at the table and experiencing what you are looking for at the table. And so you had this caveat for Mark of what he really wanted was to continue playing this character. And I think that if that is what you isolate as what the player really wants, that's what you should go with, even though it's kind of at odds with playing in character. I see playing in character as a virtue that is maybe on a tier lower than the just having fun or playing out the fantasy that you want to play. It helps, and it's a step towards that, but it's not actually the end goal, in my perspective.
Yeah, I guess it just kind of all comes down to, you know, what it is you're looking for from your D&D experience, which I say that, and I feel like you guys express that every episode, because that is really, you know, what it comes down to.
That's all fine and dandy, except that there are multiple people with multiple different desires at the table. I think that's one of the things you were talking to us about, JJ, is how to manage those differences in desires and expectations between people at the table, not just for yourself.
Yes. And so early on in our campaign, and by early on, I mean like session zero, Ray pretty much gave us the lowdown of what to expect from our campaign, not in a finality kind of thing, but just more of, this is where I'm envisioning this is going, and let me know how we can change as we go. And that was great for getting on the same page as him. But what we hadn't really talked about was amongst the players, you know, what are we trying to get out of this experience as players to each other? So in our campaign, we have the three of us, myself, Mark, and Allie. We each play different roles. There's only three of us. We have to kind of fill that whole cast. And this has recently come up in a couple of our sessions where Allie, who plays a trickery cleric, she is super into role play. She probably won't admit it, but she's really good at it. And a lot of her decision making is based on what is Lilith doing in this moment, and not so much what is Allie, the player, trying to accomplish at the table. I think for me, I like to think of, what am I, JJ, trying to do at the table? And then I kind of transition into my barbarian character, Jeffrey. So now that I've decided what JJ wants to be doing at the table, what does Jeffrey want to be doing? And then does that align? And if not, how do I kind of make it align, or do I just not make it align? So sometimes we just kind of run into those situations. And I guess you can call that character development. One such example, I think, was for Mark recently. He was tempted to just circle of death a random area on the map that he thought there were bad guys. And objectively, that would have been the best move because he would have gotten them, but he also would have gotten some friendly fire, and that might not have been so good. Early on in our campaign, that's something that Isotar, his character, probably would have done, was like, I don't care about friendly fire. I'm just going to do the objectively best choice. He had a moment of, call it weakness, if you will. He'll hate me for saying that, where he was like, no, I'm not going to do any kind of friendly fire. I'm just going to cast Fireball, which had a smaller range than Circle of Death. And he ended up missing. And Ray pulled the veil up afterwards and was like, you were this close.
Yeah, there were three invisible assassins who were escaping. And Mark did the math out. He's like, they probably have dash. It looked like they were drow. So they have 30 feet of movement. It's been two turns, which means they're somewhere in this general distance away from us. And he was crunching the numbers. He's like, oh, we just allied ourselves with this group who's here in the castle. And I know I'm going to kill dozens of them if I circle of death in that spot. And there's a chance if the enemies went that way, because they're invisible, that I'll get them in the circle of death. And it was really interesting because Mark wanted to use circle of death, but it was in Isotar's character who has just become allied with this group that he would be trying to garner goodwill with this group. And he was like, it's not what my character would do, but it's what I want to do. And his role-playing won out in the end, and he decided to do what Isotar would have done instead of what Mark wanted to do. So it definitely, it's something that I see all players kind of struggle with. What am I trying to get out of this player experience, and what would my character do, and where do those two things meet, or what's the balance to strike between those two things? Seems to vary from situation to situation.
Yeah, I think one of the things I think about in these situations too is a notion of compromise. Sometimes you're compromising with your own character, like you're kind of talking about with this circle of death situation. What does make sense for your world and your character such that in the long term you'll have more fun, even if in the short term you really wanted to do this thing, but it didn't quite make sense for the story you're telling in the long term character arc that you're building. So that's one area that I think you kind of end up compromising sometimes and thinking about a long term fun or your character development more than like in the moment, what do I want to do? But then the other, I think, big conversation to have is, what does compromise look like in a party of players and a party of characters that all have different desires? And I think this is something that's extremely relevant to every D&D game, even if you don't say it out loud. Sometimes we want to do something and we have less fun and make a choice that is less fun for the sake of party cohesion and having a good experience at the table. And I think what's very easy to believe about that is playing D&D is more fun than not playing D&D. So if it means having a good group that where everybody wants to come back and everybody takes time out of their calendar to set aside, this is D&D day because I'm excited, I want to show up, then the compromise was worth it, I think.
I would agree with that. Having these little moments where your character kind of struggles with their alignment, I think creates an indirect fun, as you were saying, where it's not, I'm just murdering all these people. That's super fun. It's, my character is experiencing a notch in their arc. And I think that's kind of fun.
I think there's an important distinction to draw here as well, that doing what the player wants to do versus what the character would do is a different conversation, although it sometimes it just happens to be the same conversation as what would my character do as opposed to what is the optimal thing to do. I think a lot of times what the player wants to do is the optimal thing because the player is maybe loves board games or tactics games. So what the player wants to do is the tactical correct thing to do, but that is not always the case. I think that a lot of times a lot of parties fall out because one person is looking for a role play experience where they are playing their character, and a lot of other people at the table are not interested in that. They are interested in Dungeons and Dragons, the war game. And I think this comes back to this conversation of having a table of people who are oriented around the same desire to get from a story. So if what the player wants is a grand story arc, that aligns with RP.
Yeah, and this can happen in the reverse direction too. I don't want our listeners to think that we're only considering the situation where a player wants to do something that is more strategic, more board game optimal, and number crunchy optimal, and can't because of roleplay. This happens in the reverse so often. I play in a lot of games that can be a little bit silly, or one person really is deep into their roleplay. We have a party of four, and our normal ability in combat is some, you know, range. And if we encounter a combat and somebody at the table starts making decisions that are very roleplay heavy and inspired by a character that they want to play, but cause us to die, that can be a very frustrating experience. And sometimes it can be really fun, but you need to be on the same page and talk about these things. If you're making roleplay choices that can make the combat surprisingly difficult or surprisingly lethal when your other party members weren't expecting it, that can be a very unfun experience for other people. And the compromise in that case would be just using a little bit more of your class abilities, doing a little bit more involved with the combat such that you aren't really hurting your other, you know, teammates.
And depending on how chaotic a person is, not their character, the thing that the player wants to do might actually be explicitly suboptimal, even though their character would be typically like an optimal combatant. So if they're playing a battle master, that fighter is going to do optimal things in combat if that's kind of their fantasy. But maybe that player is kind of a little bit of a loose cannon, and everybody's having a conversation with an NPC and they're trying to get a quest, and they're like, you know what, I'm the player and I'm bored. I walk up to that NPC and I stab him. Like, that's not optimal. It's not what the character would do. It's what the player wants to do. And that could also cause problems at your table.
Right, but then there's the alternative where a character doesn't fight because they're scared. There's a, I think, famous example of this, but I won't go into too much detail about it because it's a big spoiler for something. But a character is scared during a combat and doesn't act, imposes fear upon itself, and then the combat turns south for another player. And it ended up being a great moment. So the alternative of going up and stabbing an NPC because you're bored and that's not in character and not fun is being extremely in character and making a combat scarier, but everyone being on the same page. And that's one of the things we talk about a lot, is communication and being on the same page. All these moments have caveats. You can do the compromise and just have a little bit less fun in one specific combat to make everyone a bit happier, or you can find a group that really fits the narrative you want to play or the style you want to play so that you can do these great moments. And there's tons of in-between. So I think, JJ, in your example specifically, are you feeling like you have a little bit more room for all the players to compromise? Or do you feel like you're pulled too far away from the game that you want to be playing?
You guys always stress the importance of communication as DMs to your players. And as we're discussing this, it becomes necessary to kind of have your players talk to each other and communicate about like what it is they're trying to get from their experience and make sure that you're all on the same page. Because so with the example of Allie, Mark, and myself, like we've all known each other for years, Ray as well. So we have a good understanding of what it is we kind of want to do. And not just that, but just the communication style between us. And that's not to say we haven't had issues where we've kind of fallen out of sync, but I think it's important to, I guess, kind of have that baseline communication, because I do play in a second campaign where we don't metagame per se, but meta knowledge is kind of passed down to the characters. I'll give you an example. When we first started playing, so they had just finished up a campaign and then I joined in. We were in a combat and the bard turns to me and says, "How much health you got left?" and me who so that wouldn't fly at Ray's table. And I just kind of looked at him and I kind of said, I'm not doing so hot. And then he looked at me and was like, so what is that in number terms, like out of 100?
Yep, that's a common thing I've heard.
That's a common thing that's different across tables. That is like, yeah, an unspoken thing, that compromise that folks kind of come up with.
So I learned very quickly that, you know, they're not playing Dungeons and Dragons wrong. It's just like, that's just how that group plays D&D. And as the outsider who's joining that, I should tailor my gameplay to kind of fit that group. I kind of compromise a little bit. Like, I'll say, like, I'm low 20s, where it feels like I'm not giving them the 100% number, but giving them enough where I feel like I'm not just completely metagame.
I think meta knowledge is a whole different conversation on its own. But from my perspective, meta knowledge always exists. And so I'm not super, super picky about meta knowledge at my game if I see that everyone is having fun, because I can do whatever I want as a DM. I can change numbers if they're metagaming so much that the combats get easier. So from my perspective, I kind of think of D&D meta as at a very base level, like writing a novel or like casting a reality TV show. If you're casting Survivor or Desperate Housewives, you're looking for people who in certain situations are going to, you know, maybe drink a lot and be, you know, very funny on TV or start drama on TV. If you're creating a character in Dungeons and Dragons, you're creating a character that is going to pick up the magic item, that is going to go out and fight and be scared in certain situations. So you're having this meta knowledge of the world that you're living in and what your character should do and which character you should make in that world. You're not just picking a random character, a random farmer, and throwing them at something. You're creating an adventure. You're creating a very specific style of game that you want to play based on your character's personality. I think that is a very serious level of meta knowledge about the game. So the little bit more of how much health do you have, how much of this do you have, doesn't bother me so much.
I think just to bring it all back to the core maybe of what JJ was saying is, as important as it is for a DM to pitch what this game is going to be and what it's going to feel like and what the tone is going to be like, it's almost just as important for the players to talk to each other and be like, what type of group are we going to have and what type of social behavior between our characters is acceptable? The example might be for a group that's super tight-knit and really knows each other, one player deciding to play a character whose story arc is that they are going to like betray the party might be totally okay. And that's kind of expected from the players at the table. They're in tune to that possibility. Whereas at another table, that might upset someone at like a very foundational core level, that someone would knock one of the other players unconscious, steal their family heirloom and disappear. And then that player becomes like a DM NPC. But that would, the player who was playing that character got to have a full story arc for their character where they were in the party and then eventually they had that betrayal moment. And we've seen that in a lot of TV and novels. So it's definitely a trope that exists out there. Getting on the same page early and deciding what is fair game is super important between different players, not just between the DM and the players.
Just having a player that is interested in the main plot quest versus having a character that's not interested in the main plot quest is a very big deal. And I think that's something that players need to talk about a little bit more and DMs need to talk about a little bit more. I often play characters that are really attached to deities or really attached to their own spiritual connection in the world. I think that's just a fun thing for me to roleplay. And a lot of times I kind of don't care about the individual plot quests because I'm more interested in like the spiritual deified world. And so I play a character that doesn't really care. And if the plot moves in one way, I might not go with it. And I think that is just as much a difference in playing style as roleplay versus strategic can be. So I think there are lots of places where this kind of friction comes up.
There's actually some, I wouldn't call it friction, but we're experiencing this right now in your campaign, Ray, where Allie, so Al's character Lilith, essentially she knows that the world is ending and we don't know the world is ending, but the three of us know the world is ending. For me, I'm a huge fan of just like pursue the main quest because that's where all the meat is, which isn't the case in video games. I like to do the side quest first, but I don't know why that is the way it is.
That's interesting.
So I'm all about get the main quest because that's where the meat is. And Allie is, I'm assuming there's some sort of role play decision behind this, why she hasn't told us yet, because I can't think of one from my perspective other than maybe she just likes the fact that she just has this knowledge and we don't.
I think that's definitely part of it.
I'm just wondering if there's a role play element that she's kind of considering, like why she's holding on to this knowledge. And we just went over this last night, all of our like plot hooks and everything. In my head, I think that nugget of information that she has, that the world is ending, is kind of a catalyst for us to pick up the main quest. And it's almost like if she doesn't tell us, we don't know how to prepare for it. And so we're just going to go in and do all of the side. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe she just wants to go to the Temple of Timora and finish her side quests. And then she's like, oh, by the way, world's ending. Let's go fix that.
Yeah, there's, as long as you guys don't know about the main plot hook, her personal character plot line is the main plot. So she's holding your characters hostage, basically.
I could see myself really loving playing a character that had those motivations also. But again, it's this idea of compromise with the party. Like, what are you doing to the other party members when you build a character whose intentions aren't in line with them? And maybe it's a lot less fun for you guys, I don't know. But I tend to take derailing the whole party very seriously. Like, some things that I'll do if I have a character that is kind of like this is I will have them go on a mission on their own. And I think that can be really fun and something I've worked together with a DM to do several times. And it's always worked out great.
I just want to defend Allie for a second because she's not here to defend herself. She yes. has not derailed yes. the campaign. The end of the world is far enough off that almost all of the available directions that you guys could go in are relevant. There aren't any side quests that end in dead ends per se. But to JJ's point, it makes it really hard for him to roleplay. Because every decision is, well, how can we stop the world from ending? Oh, wait, my character doesn't know the world is ending. And that's probably the way you start every single decision tree.
Pretty much, yeah. And I just want to reiterate, Allie, I love you. I'm not smack-talking you on this podcast where you have no voice of your own.
I think I have a really solid piece of advice that, and this is something that has worked really well for me in the game that I play in. So Ben from We Speak Common runs a Tomb of Annihilation game that I'm a player in. And that game is super, super, super RP heavy. We are role playing all the time. Everything is in character all the time. Every time we have an opportunity to rest, our characters break off into twos and we basically have like improv sessions with each other. And every single long rest has four inter-character conversations where the other characters are not present and are just listening in. And that's awesome. However, we can get ourselves into some messy situations where we have a decision to make and all of a sudden, we've been talking about what we want to do next for 30 minutes in character, and we're talking in circles. And then the light bulb goes on in my head. Oh, the reason why we can't do anything here is because we're all pretending to roleplay, but what we're really doing is representing what we as players want to do through the lens of our character. We're not role-playing our characters right now. We're using our characters to try to get what we want as players. So something that I've done a few times is pause the game. Like, everybody, pause. What do we want to do? Not do what do your characters want to do. Like, that's part of it. If you had to vote right now, which of these things would you want to do? We've been talking about it in character for 30 minutes, and we haven't gotten anywhere. Let's take a not in character vote here. We can read between the lines of what is it that the players want to do versus what you're saying your character wants to do. And that has helped a bunch.
This is not a new, this is great advice, Ray. I just mean to say, this is not something that has never been done before. This is something that you can trust works really well in lots of different groups. If there's a group chat on the side or a text thread on the side of players talking about what they want for the game going forward, it's like this, except that maybe you don't have all these people's phone numbers, right? But it's this really great idea of, let's keep a separate conversation, totally out of character, where we can just talk about the game, give each other feedback, what's going well, where do we want to go? Because if you have an idea in your head of where you want to go, the session will run smoother and your role play will be better for it, I think. It will certainly be smoother. If you imagine a DM planning for a session, if that DM knows where they want to go, they can roleplay the NPCs extremely effectively. They have an understanding of the world. They have an understanding of what things are going to be said. The same can be true of players. If players have an overarching idea of where they want each other to go with this story, they can roleplay that out extremely effectively. It's almost like not writing a script, but having an outline for yourselves of the next few moments, so that you can live out your roleplay fantasies very clearly and eloquently. I think these kinds of text threads or pauses in games are really, really helpful and happen in lots of places throughout all the hobbies. This idea of staying on the same page out of character.
In the other campaign that I'm a player in, we actually do have a separate chat that is just all the players and not the DM. Where if we ever feel like we're just stuck or not getting anywhere story-wise, we'll just pop that up and be like, what are we trying to accomplish here, guys? Like, what do we want to do? Which is just purely us as players just trying to figure that out. And I think that's a really effective way of figuring out where we're going, because that campaign is so sandboxy and open that we can just kind of just go wherever we want to go. And that can become overwhelming. So we're just like, all right, bring it in. What are we trying to do? Currently in that other campaign, we have to go from point A to point B. However, on the way to point B, one of our players wants to stop at his hometown and make sure that everyone is safe from the impending doom. And obviously for the rest of us players, we don't care. We, you know, like that's not going to help us in any way. But there is that understanding that this is part of their fantasy that they want to play out. So we as players also need to entertain that and kind of be part of their fantasy and not necessarily take away from it. And so I guess I have a question for you guys as DMs. What do you do when you, if this has been an issue for you guys at the table or not, what do you do when you have players whose role playing kind of puts them in opposite directions, where one wants to go one way, one wants to go the other? Neither is necessarily an objective decision. It's more of just like, this is what their characters want to do. How do you navigate that kind of decision making as a DM? Or do you just kind of like sit and do nothing? Or do you just be like, go in the text chat and figure it out amongst yourselves?
So this is something that has happened in our game, JJ. Maybe it doesn't feel like it was painful when it did happen, because as a DM, the technique that I employ, and there's lots of techniques that you can, is maybe I'll call for an early end to the session, or I'm just pretty proactive about tasking you guys what are the things that you're interested in, and you guys are pretty proactive about telling me where you're going to go. So that's really helpful as well. And what I'll do is I'll make sure that the things that are there are relevant to the other players that are present. So when we think about Mental Dareth, the city where I put the Temple of Timora in our game, there were plenty of other things there that were relevant to Jeffrey and Isotar going on. And I think that allowed the visits that you guys made to the temple. We basically like took things that you guys were interested in and kind of like blocked them in between visits to the temple. So you guys went to the temple, then you guys went to a casino, then you guys went back to the temple, then there was a huge combat in the market square. Then Lilith went back to the temple in a solo session because I didn't want to bring you guys, everybody, back to the temple again. So I think that what we can do as DMs is we can go where that player wants to go, but we should inject things that we know are going to be interesting to the other players into that scenario. So my advice to this hypothetical DM that I've never met, that is the DM of your other campaign, is I would ask the other players, like, what are the types of things that you guys like to do? And if combat is like a prevalent answer, I would make sure that there is some awesome combat that's going to unfold in that town while we're going to visit that person's hometown, so that everybody will get something that they feel fulfillment from out of that pit stop.
I think it's interesting. A lot of the points you've made are things that I try to do more. Sometimes I don't do a great job of this. I kind of like to be hands-off a little bit as a DM, and these are the moments that I think are some of the most difficult for me. Ray brought up a great point of asking your players direct questions. What do you want to do next? Where are you guys going? Because that, I think, prompts people to have frank conversations, but also is saying, I need an answer to this. Like, we're ready to move on. We've been talking about this. It seems like other people are frustrated. Like, we're ready to move on. Give me an answer. I think that's very helpful. Ray's other point of putting in things that other characters will find interesting, giving other players hooks, I think is really, really helpful. And something I've talked about on the podcast before that I think is still one of my best pieces of advice is that D&D does not have to be realistic. If you go to this temple, sometimes I'll just put a different character from somebody else's backstory at the temple, and they're working together. And of course, there's hundreds of thousands of people in this world. There's 1,000 different temples. What are the chances that this other person was also there, also helping them out? And there was a big conspiracy about it, tying all three of your backstories together. Not very realistic, but can be super, super fun at the table. I think almost all the time that I do this, it is more fun and players don't feel like it's unbelievable or annoying. So I think that's a great way to do these hooks. But there's still a question for me of what do you do when your players like are at odds? And, you know, not that they've chosen to go to this temple, but they are still in the decision-making process. And maybe I ask them a direct question, but it doesn't seem like they've come to a consensus. I think one of the things you can do is say, hey, how about we do this? Trust me, I think there will be parts in it that will be fun for you. That's one thing you can kind of say is, like, take my hand a little bit. Let's go on this adventure together. I'll make sure that your concerns and that your interests are being met. The other thing you can do is split the party. Not as fun. But I really think this idea of sometimes taking a little bit of control, and I know that the players really feel strongly about some things, but it's a game with a lot of people. It's not going to be perfect. Let's make a decision. Take my hand and trust me, the DM, that I'm going to put something in front of you that you'll really enjoy. And that next session or the session after that, we'll get to the thing you were really excited about. And we'll work together on that.
This has been an awesome conversation about this. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. So, JJ, maybe if you could bring us back to the beginning and maybe re-summarize the essence of the thing that you wanted to talk about, and maybe the piece of advice that you think is most applicable, and then Ariel and I can give our final thoughts as well. And then you can take us out of here.
So we've certainly covered a lot, and we've kind of gone on small tangents and really fleshed out.
Would you say that we've gone a little off the rails?
You know what? I think I would. Kind of tying it back to the initial idea of, like, how do you kind of make your decisions when playing D&D? Is it influenced by your role play? Is it influenced by you at the table? Is it a combination of both? And, you know, how do you tailor that to the gameplay of your peers that are also at the table? And I think we've talked a lot about that. You guys have given some pretty good insight. And I think the favorite piece of advice that I had from this was trust in the DM. I know it's a lot as players to trust in our dungeon masters, but if you have set something up for one character or two, I think that's good advice, that I should trust that even if there's not something in it for me directly there, that you're thinking of all of us and not just one player. Like, you're not the soccer dad who's the coach and putting, you know, the all-star son at, you know, the striker. You're kind of, you're letting us all get some playtime in there. And so I think I should trust my dungeon master more. Brownie points.
You know what? I'm going to give you a +3 grade axe the next time we play.
give me that inspiration.
Yep.
So one thing that I do want to say about playing your role and role playing is, and I'm very guilty of this, and Mark and Allie know that I am, is don't assume that because you are playing a specific role, as in the tank, that you are then entitled to your party members buying you sweet gear just because you're the tank. I have been guilty of this. Allie was the keeper of the money. Ray dangled some really sweet items for me, and I turned to Allie and I said, I want it. I'm the tank. I need the beefy stuff to keep myself beefy. And she was like, no, why am I buying this for you? So don't assume that because you are playing a specific role, you are entitled to anything that is related to your role. Sometimes you gotta role play for it and convince the rest of your party that it's necessary to kind of indulge you.
Well, that's very kind of you, JJ. I think the piece of advice that I would harp on again is actually a piece of advice that JJ gave, which is during your session zero, as players turn to each other and ask each other what the vibe of the game is going to be. By that, I mean, are you playing a Guardians of the Galaxy fast and loose style group? Are all of you going to be very righteous paladins and clerics? And you don't need to dial in on it, but if one person says, oh, we're playing villainous characters, and the other person says, oh, we're all going to be like lawful good, that's something that you obviously need to work out in session zero. And yeah, don't put it all on your DM to navigate the split between playing your role and role playing. It's between the players to kind of get real with each other and say, hey, listen, what are we trying to get out of this experience, and can we move in that direction?
Yeah, my advice, I guess, would be that nobody's perfect. You know, talk things out. If something doesn't go exactly right, pause the game. I think that Ray was talking about that being extremely active in the session about these kinds of problems can be really nice. And just pause the game. Talk. It's okay if everything didn't go perfectly smoothly. You guys are not improvisational wizards. There's no magic literally in the words you're saying. You have to come up with everything on the fly, and it's not going to be perfect. And so if something doesn't quite work out immediately, pause, talk about it. I really like that piece of advice. I think it's something that maybe you don't think of as an option. You're so focused on your character sheet or what your character would want to say, you don't think that it's a possibility to take a step back and be yourself, be JJ, be Ariel, and say, hey, can we pause for a second? I don't know what's going on. So I really like that piece of advice, and I think it can be extremely helpful.
JJ, it was such a pleasure having you.
Yeah, well, first of all, thank you guys both for having me on. It's cool being on the speaking end of this, and I'm sure I'm going to hate the sound of my voice when I listen to this. But anyway, I'm JJ Serkin.
I'm Raymond O'Connor.
I'm Ariel Rasko.
And thanks for listening to Running Off the Rails.
If you enjoyed Running Off the Rails, please like, follow, and review our show on your platform of choice. Please follow our Instagram, Running Off the Rails, for notifications whenever we release a blog post, a new episode, or new content on the DMs Guild. If you prefer a specific type of content, please send us a message on Instagram. The jam you are listening to is Hoist by Andy G. Cohen, and you can find Hoist and more of Cohen's music on the Free Music Archive. You can find links to all of our content at runningofftherails.com or on our Facebook page, Running Off the Rails.